Talk about the price of corn. Up on stage is the corn panel. All each of these folks appear on the closing market report at least one day a week. Is that right? Yeah, they do. Matt Bennett is missing. However, Kurt Kimmel is here. He's there. We talked with him just a little bit. He's with agmarket.net. We talked with him on Mondays during the closing market report on turnaround Tuesday. Wayne Nelson is with us. Whatever Kurt has done, the opposite happens. And we talked with Wayne on Tuesday during the afternoon. He also is with agmarket.net. Greg Johnson is on the end in black with TGM Total Grain Marketing. We talked to him Wednesday afternoon, and we wrap up the week with Mike Zuzlow from globalcomresearch.com. He's out of Atchison, Kansas. Thank you for driving in today. Actually, last night, I suppose. Are you going home today still?
Going home today, full cup of coffee.
So he wants to be done quick. No, he's here for the duration. We're going to talk a little bit about the price of corn. Mike, I'm going to let you lay the fundamental picture out for us in the corn market at the moment before tomorrow's WASDE report. And if you could tell us what those numbers are going to look like, that would be very helpful.
Okay, I will do that. I did promise a gift to everybody because something that I wanted to talk about today to you, and thanks for having me back, Todd. I think that we are, after last week's program and after that G20 meeting we had last week, and the way it went down, where no one could condemn the Ukraine war, Russia and China are essentially one step away from formally binding their wagons to each other. And from a standpoint of a historical mindset in the commodity markets, I think the WASDE report kind of pales in comparison of what we're maybe heading towards. In that, if China does go ahead and give the green light to Ukraine and arm them, that will be a red line the United States and Europe, I don't think, will not take, and that we will probably be on the cusp of a deglobalization wave that we really haven't had to deal with since the end of World War II. And I don't like talking about this. I don't like bringing this up, but I fought myself all week last week about it, coming here and talking to you about it. And I thought, if I didn't bring it up and it happened, how would I feel? Versus if I brought it up and nothing happened, then we didn't have to worry about it. And so I said I'd give you a gift. That gift is, this is a big thing. It's a big thing to me and to my analysis. My clients and subscribers have the special report, but I would invite you all to go to globalcomresearch.com. That's globalcom with two M's, research.com. There are blog posts. The latest one I have, if you use the password, is beefhouse23, and that's all small case. That special report sitting there, and I'd offer that to you to take a look at it and give you an idea of why I think that there's a better than 50-50 chance that China will go ahead and move forward with arming Ukraine, arming Russia, and essentially start up the Cold War all over again. So I'm sorry I couldn't answer your question. I want to give the other guys a chance. So I'll back away, and then we can come back around if you want me to talk about the WASDE.
Oh, we're just all ready to leave now.
There is liquor in the beef house now.
Well, we'll get to your, because your risk management must be pretty interesting given that conversation. Let's do talk with the rest of them. On the ground in East Central Illinois, in the draw area from TGM, and maybe you can define that for us a little bit, Craig. What does the current fundamental look like?
Well, farmers, the county yields just came out a couple weeks ago, and Central Illinois was unbelievably good. I think four counties in our draw territory set records, can't set county records. Champaign County was 214 bushels an acre, just missed the county record by a bushel or two. And if you would have asked me back in August, I would have said there's no way. So TGM's draw territory, Effingham County outproduced Champaign County, which has never happened before in the 40 years I've been in business. So the crop, they got plenty of rain. Crops were good. Farmers are happy. It's been set up here before. Farmers have made good money the last 2 years. With the higher input costs and the lower prices, it's looking like it's still going to be an okay year, but it's just not going to be as good as it's been the last 2 years.
And just because TGM now owns the facility that was owned by the Andersons.
Formerly the Andersons.
Yeah, yeah, formerly the Andersons. But when you talk about Effingham, there are, what, 23 grain elevators? I can't quite
remember. 40.
40.
40.
But they run along I-70 mostly?
Yeah, this one's the only one in Champaign County. They're mainly in Effingham County, Coles County. They're all 2 to 3 counties south. We're here in Champaign, we're kind of in an island all by ourselves.
And then Kirk Kimmel, to get us started, maybe lay out what the most recent activity looks like on the charts.
Yeah, just to follow up on Mike's comment, too, on this China, I think it's a very serious, good point, Mike. And there's more and more talk of China. In fact, they've gone to a mode now of building additional storage for grain in case a geopolitical worldwide event would have happened. So I don't know if we're laying the groundwork. They know that there could be consequences involved. And that could be bullish and bearish both. One, they need to fill the bins. And two, once they're filled, they won't buy anything or, you know, so there's a lot of moving parts. So you've got to be real cautious here and use some risk management. Price-wise, I think last week was huge. Voice of the tomb, March 1st, buy corn. It worked so far. Mm-hmm. And I think you got to keep an eye on that from a couple points. One is the chart low on the March corn was 624. That was where the December futures went off the board. And so it kind of held there. December corn futures, on the other hand, had a low of about 656. Well, that was the December 22 chart low back in August before going higher. So I think last week's price levels are very key points to watch. Now, the key in here is try to get some retracement levels back to the upside. Technically, we've got one of the best technicians in the business, Brian Splitt. On Wednesday afternoons, he does a technical video. Very simple. He draws trend lines. He does simple tops and bottoms and stuff. He doesn't do Gann or Elliott and this and that. It's very simple. And I invite you to take a look at it. And I passed out some long-term price and supply-demand charts on that particular handout there. We've got a QR code on there. If you want to take a look at what I'm looking at, you hit that QR code and you can see the technical report on Wednesday and the fundamental report on Monday, and you can see what we're looking at and talking about. But short term, I think you can go to the more research seasonal chart. It basically sees corn just kind of like this going into March. We've got a little low here at the end of March, and that's probably due to the fact that uncertainty going into March right now will probably go lower in the March because we're going to have 91 million corn acres. We're going to have 181 bushels an acre. We're going to have a 2 billion bushel carry out and corn is going to zero. So we could probably see that little seasonal trend going into March. But what we're watching is at the end of March into June, the seasonal charts over 15 years shows about a 30% up, 30 cent up in corn. So if you look at corn, December corn futures here at 670, that puts you back up, 570. It's 560. It puts you back up close to $6. So from a producer's point of view, technically, I think there's a shot to rebound back up towards that $596 level of December futures.
Your reference to the QR code reminded me that you probably all saw the QR code of this cute little square on the back of the agenda today. That is a QR code. And if you scan that with your phone when it's on photo, eventually today's audio should show up at the page that it's going to now that doesn't seem to make any sense to you. Thanks to both Jason Croft and to Jerry Moorfield, who is over here, who have been recording all day. And we'll get that up as quickly as we can. It won't take very long. Wayne Nelson with AgMarket.net as well as with us. Wayne, you've been on this stage since 1991. Well, when we're here anyway.
When we're here.
Yeah. Tell me historically what this feels, because this feels like an historic year. I think sometime, I don't remember who it was that I was, maybe it was you on Friday that we were talking about this being the kind of pivotal year in the world of agriculture. Does it feel that way to you?
If you listen to the last presenter, it sure does. I mean, this looks like a change in history, a change in agriculture and everything. I can remember looking out over this room. Charlie Lindy had a picture of trying to do this, wanting to come to people. Back when we started in 1988 with Commodity Week, we went out. We did meetings. We were on the road one or two nights a week, different around different places through the winter, doing meetings and through the summer and doing that. We drove a lot of miles. We did a lot of things. This, the first time this was, I think we had about 160 people, I think the first time.
1991. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's grown since then. It's just a tremendous thing. I've seen a lot of familiar faces, but I'm seeing a lot of new faces today. And that's really a great thing, because a lot of the people that come back then are old and aren't here with us anymore.
Well, that's happy too. They've been happy all day.
Well, I mean, you know, what I'm meaning is there's people taking their place. We're seeing more interested farmers. We're seeing FarmDoc come in here and really pump up our program, and with the idea of bringing people. How many people do we have that didn't look at WILL that might listen to it now and see what's going on in the agriculture programming there? But this has been just a lot of fun to look out here. And I'll tell you what, to keep this together and keep it working, I'd like you all to have a round of applause for Todd here. He does a tremendous job.
Thank you.
The stuff that he does, organizes and gets together, and the people that he puts us with, he makes us all look good. We have for years. So that's one of the things. Everybody has had what Mike said on their mind. Everybody is scared that China and Russia are going to go together, that we're going to get pulled into it because of Taiwan, because of everything. I didn't have anything to say about that, except we've got really rocky conditions with China. And they aren't buying from us. They're going to avoid buying from us. And that's what's sort of taken this market on down a little bit now. But, you know, it's one of the things that you look at and you see and you say, we have an inversion. The nearby is higher than the deferred. And every month we look at, and yes, you know, just in the last couple of weeks, we've seen us go through price levels we didn't think we'd go through. We thought $6 was going to be a place to start selling corn, not, you know, to finish up and wish we had it all above there. I think that, like Kurt said, we've got a good chance for a little bit of a bounce back. Eric this morning, I think, told us that we weren't going to have quite as good a planning, early planning season, which might, I was going to say, if he'd said that we were going to have good weather, we could begin the field here last of March for some of these early beans, first parts of April and everything like that, I was going to feel really, really depressed and say that it's hard to find a good bounce coming without some weather problems. But he is talking about some delays, some muddiness, a few things along the way. And I think we have to be ready to probably do a little pricing there. You know, as you looked at everything they told you about our increased expenses and whatever, and our interest costs, we don't have the margins we've had the last few years. These prices look tremendous. I mean, you know, if you'd been here just 5 years ago, these prices, this is the second highest insurance level we've ever had. Second highest. I mean, and that's as we can insure corn and beans by, both in corn and beans. And that should say we've got a great backstop. We've got a wonderful thing. Who would have said if you could get $5 corn not that far back for sure and done it, and that's not a problem that we even be concerned. But fertilizer prices, land costs, everything, cash rents, everything has went up like that. So we're going to be looking at putting on either some actual futures, cash sales, or options or something if we can get back in that 580 to 620 bracket on the new crop corn.
On what percentage of the new crop?
Depending on where you're at, I'm hoping that all of you got at least 20% of it priced earlier above $6. If you haven't, then you're going to be a little more of an optimistic person, and you still want you to at least get to, I want you to do another 10 or 20 if you've got that. If you haven't done that, getting to 20 is going to be hard enough for the person who doesn't want to sell much.
Yeah, I'm not known to be optimistic, but no.
No, that's fine.
Kurt Kimmel, how do you help farmers manage this risk? Because it sounds to me like there is a lot of potential risk that needs to be managed. Some of it they're going to do, I know, with crop insurance.
Yeah, there's just a lot of moving parts or a lot of balloons in the air. We're all pretty seasoned on weather and accepting back their growing conditions. But this world events, and, you know, I get up 2:30 every morning and check the markets and go back to sleep, and you just wonder what's going to happen. It's a lot of things that are out of our control. The weather cooperates. You guys do a great job raising a crop, but now the challenge is getting the best price for it and not letting it go back hill on you. So what we're looking at is manage that risk. There's a lot of premium up front on old crop, a lot of strong bases, some good levels. We've been pushing some sales, then defend the upside by defending $6.70 or $7 on the upside. There's nothing worse than selling something, all of a sudden you see the price go up. So, well, you can have your cake and eat it both here at the same time. Option volatility's come down. You can move some old corn and do a replacement. So if weather does turn hot and dry after we have a wet spring, you can recoup it that way. If you're going to hang on until July. I think basis is going to be strong into July. You got to remember, we're still deficit short out west. We're short 400 million, 200 million in Kansas and Nebraska. We're still seeing grain move from the east to the west. Basis-wise, it's interesting. You get in Iowa and Minnesota. We're seeing 70 cents difference in bids in corn just in a 30-mile radius. So you got to be mobile and be able to take advantage of some opportunities on that to try to achieve a higher price. As far as old crop, that's a different breed of cat. New crop, I think you got to be flexible in your marketing plan. It's tough to sell a whole lot of cash grain ahead not knowing whether we're going to get in the ground or what type of production we're going to have. So I think you got to use some price floors, and there's a little art, a little challenge to getting the right combination on to do that, Todd.
How many of you have at least one bushel of old crop corn yet to sell? Raise your hands. Thank you. See, I asked only about one bushel, not more than that. So let's say everybody, 100% or close to it, have something to sell. What does the basis tell you about what they should do at this point with old crop corn?
Basis on corn is 10 cents better than it was a year ago. Part of that, most of that probably is because, as Kurt just alluded to, the short crop out west, the Western Corn Belt, basis levels out there have been $1.20 over. Here in central Illinois, you know, it's more like option price. So they're paying $1.20 a bushel more for corn, because they had a 20% drop in yield. Their pasture burned up. Cattle are at all-time high prices, so they need to feed them something, and they will feed them something, but they're bringing in corn from the east. So that's had a spillover effect. And I agree with Kurt. Basis will stay strong on old crop corn throughout the summer. It's already 10 cents better, and it'll continue to stay strong. As far as new crop is concerned, I take away a lot from what I've already heard today from Eric this morning. We don't know what we're going to do weather-wise. Nobody can predict the weather. But I spoke at a meeting before the Ag Outlook meeting 2-3 weeks ago, and I didn't think I was that negative, but I just reiterated what they said. If we have a normal crop, if we plant 91 million acres of corn, and if we have a normal crop, we won't have a 1.3 billion bushel carryout. We'll have a 1.8 billion bushel carryout. And that's not $7 corn. That's $5 corn. And we're at $6 corn, roughly. At least we were at that point, $5.90 something. So longer term, the price is probably headed lower. But my point that I think people didn't hear me say was, going into 2022, there were five things that happened that we weren't predicting. The Russia-Ukraine war was probably number one. Nobody could have predicted that. Nobody could have predicted that the Western Corn Belt was going to have a drought. Nobody could have predicted the kind of inflation that we've had up to this point. So my point is, we can sit here and say, you know, this is what we should do as of today, but I guarantee you things will change throughout 2023, and then we'll all look back and say, well, you know, if we would have known that. So I guess to answer your question, old crop corn basis is strong, but the futures part of the equation is very much up in the air.
We'll get questions from you in a moment. Coming back to risk management let's start with old crop and see what you think about timing on your thoughts as it relates to Russia and China and what producers should do.
I think in corn on the old crop, Todd, we do have a window here of improving our shipments, our exports, and picking up the pace the next, say, 90, maybe 120 days, because I do think that the second crop corn in Brazil, maybe the Brazilians are going to be a little bit tighter fisted with what they have. I would also say that if the grain initiative on the Black Sea is not extended after March 18th, I think that could be very healthy for the cash corn prices here in the United States. And so I feel pretty good, like the other guys, about the basis out in ARC part of the country, feedlot country in Kansas, which is about 3.5 hours away from me. I'm right on the Kansas-Missouri border. It's gone from about $2 over down to about $1.25 over. So they're still red hot for corn. Nebraska basis is starting to go back up again. It was sitting at about $1.30, $1.40 last fall, last summer, fall time period. It's broken back down to about 70, 60 over. But cattlemen out there are really eager to get some corn locked because they're worried, because their elevators are telling them that they're not going to have much between now and June. So I think we've got time on old crop corn.
Questions from you all? Who's got one? Anybody? So I do want to follow up on something that Joanna Colucci, and Joanna, maybe you can correct me if I heard this wrong, but what you told us this morning was that 30% of the corn crop, second crop or safrinha corn in Brazil has or will be planted outside of its prime time. That's correct, which is different than what I was thinking about, which was we're already reached 100%. How much difference does that make to you that 70% of the crop is still within its prime planting season?
You know, I'll give you my value levels, Todd, for new crops: 675 overvalue, 540 for undervalue, and that's December futures. So we're 30 cents from that. Picture an issue where we can't get planted in a timely basis here in this country in some part of the key part of the corn growing region. In the region, and then at the same time have an issue with the second crop, Brazilian corn crop. I think that's where the new crop is probably more undervalued, especially in relation to the new crop beans. So I could see a scenario if those two things would happen, the market would need to react to it. One thing we learned in 22 was that the supply was what drove the market. It wasn't demand. It was weather and it was supply. And it doesn't look like 23, between the Federal Reserve and China, that 23 is going to be giving us anything different to work with until we get well down into maybe the end of the calendar year or something like that.
How tough are corn exports out of the United States this year?
You know, we're way behind on the corn exports. We need to catch up. It doesn't look like we're going to. We get put a smaller number out there to begin with. China does not seem to want to be doing any business with us. If Mike is right at all, they're not going to do any business with us. They're going to stay far, far away from us. Our biggest deal is going to come along with how poor the Argentina can get on their corn crop, number one, and how much that Brazil is going to ship to them or whatever back and forth, or will Brazil really fill in and take our corn market away? But for right now, we're looking at it, the levels we're at now, their ethanol margins are positive. When we dropped down to the low, we saw when we had the big sell-off here in the last 2 weeks, the open interest went up those 3 days. That meant end users were buyers. They are buyers at those lower levels. We saw ethanol plants pushing bids. We were 20 over for delivered through last Friday for corn at Linden. You're looking that way. So there's demand. It's just at lower levels. The demand seems to go away around 660, and it seems to come back in down 620 to 630. So we have demand, you know, internally in the country, but I think, and also at some of those points, we saw some Chinese buying on the country of China, but the private firms in China on TRQs or what they have where they can buy so much along the way. And I think that it's just hanging in there, and we need to get some more bushels moved out, hopefully at the levels down there, and maybe that if the commercials bought it down there, that they are going to turn around and maybe they can continue to move out and get our exports picked back up. But for right now, we're hurting that way. And I think we all need that John Deere sensor that can do this immediately and catch it when it starts moving.
maybe. Let's stay with the fundamentals of the marketplace. Exports, feed, and ethanol demand. You told us that there was buying underneath the market, some of it clearly coming from the ethanol industry. However, yesterday, after I talked to you, Kurt, talked to Dan O'Brien from Kansas State. We do that once a month. He runs he doesn't run them, but he looks at the models and runs them, I suppose, from Iowa State for ethanol plants. And he told me something that concerned me, which was that he thought there might be some seasonality within the ethanol industry, meaning that last year there was a whole bunch of fall purchases. They really were in the market, and ethanol was being produced in a big way, and then it fell off according to the EIA. Same thing may be happening this year as well.
Well, what happened was, if you have to buy grain, you're paying $2 over. You go, my God, I don't want that to happen again. So they were buying left and right all fall long, and they got overextended going to year end. They were booked at year end. They were booked out to February, and so they backed off. Also, too, you got to remember we had some weather problems up in that northwest, and that shut transportation down. And so they backed off on their grind there for a couple times. And so that kind of messed things up. I've got every morning the ability to listen to JSA's commercial side, and I can tell you that they are covered out to the first part of May right now. And they're eager buyers on any type of price break in here to have that coverage in place. What we saw last week was huge commodity fund selling. We won't see the numbers for a while until the CFTC gets that straightened out. But the commercials are right in there taking the other side of it. Now, they've got some coverage on here. They're worried about getting coverage into that July time window.
So from the grain elevator side, your feed market rail and ethanol, I suppose, too. How does the marketplace in general feel to you for usage?
It's dead right now.
That's nice.
I'm sorry. Without an export market, we're just relying on the same old cattle hog feed market that we've had forever. The last 2 years, when China's come into the market and the export market's picked up, the rail market has responded, and we've had some very good values. Unfortunately, this year, unless you're in Western Kansas, Nebraska, Oklahoma, Texas, that feeder market, Mexico, that's the hot market right now. But the Southeast market, the Gulf market, which is the markets that our rail hits, is not very, very strong right now.
Your part of the world is short corn. What do the fundamentals feel like, given that you're also short animals?
Well, I mean, that's where it comes into the beef versus the pork. And I think that's where USDA came in with a 6% lower beef production number this year, calendar year. I think it's actually going to be down more than that, Todd, now that we've gotten this last cattle on feed report. But they're also stoking up the pork number by 2%. So red meat numbers are on the decline, but they're not falling dramatically. I think that's a big key right there.
The thing on the hog side, the previous hog and pig report showed we'd have 2-3% less, but actual slaughter and kill number, we're actually running 1-2% more. There's total more pork out there. So on the pork side, hopefully it's making up on the cattle side. But this cattle market, it's for real as far as being tight and bullish. If you were looking for a speculative trade, I'd keep an eye on the fat market. The feeders are a little overpriced in my mind. But this beef side is going to stay firm clear into next fall. If you're a consumer, don't know anything about commodities, I'd go to the store and fill the freezer with some ribeyes.
That sounds good, Kurt. I've got a question for the audience. We heard this morning that we were going to plant the baseline has us with a lot more acres of corn than beans, but it's showing that we're making more per acre on beans than corn. How many people here are going to plant the same as they planted last year, or your percentages? Are you going to just hold with your rotation, I guess, would be the question.
With rotations.
Okay, yeah, okay, 80%. How about, is anybody going to add more beans because of the profitability level? Okay, you're a lone guy there.
One guy in Logan County, Illinois.
But we like, you know, that's something that they think the corn-bean ratio will do a lot of times. We pull some acres here along the way. And I don't know. One year we were here and there was a lot of Federal Land Bank and Farm Credit people here, and they said that they were talking to people and they didn't raise their hands to say they're going to switch from the corn-bean ratio. Now, I don't know, but looking at that, looks like it's going to be good to plant beans because we shouldn't have the overflow of that. Now, how many in your areas know of a new soybean processing plant coming on or being put? Because I know there's like 26 new plants going to be going. Some of them talking about being ready. Like
you. Who's got one that'll be ready for fall delivery?
Just being built or supposedly being built, and then who'd be ready for fall?
Who's got one? Who's got a plant? Just one person has a plant that's being built that's close enough to them. Where are you from? Northern Illinois, is that right?
Yeah.
Hennepin. Oh, sure. Up by on the river. Okay.
Okay. You know, as we look here, I think that the funds are not positive right now. They've rode longs, and they haven't made money on them. So we're seeing the money flow and the funds sort of going out of the market here. So it's going to take the next scare is what brings it in. Is it going to be weather? Is it going to be war? Is it going to be politics? Is it going to be the WASD report tomorrow? We don't look for a big WASD report change on this report. It's generally not big. I think it will probably be the end of the month. It'll be the stocks and the planning intentions.
You know, and that's a really good point Wayne just made about the WASD report versus the planning intentions. I do think the WASD report, the bean longs in this market are getting old. And, you know, when you look at the wheat and the corn, Todd, versus the beans, yes, we've got weaker demand in the wheat and the corn. Yes, we've got Argentina in the meal market, but there's got to be something else that's holding these bean longs in the market. And I think with what, you know, we talked about at the beginning of this panel, and then you throw on top of that the USDA average cash price that they gave us on the Outlook meeting, we could be in for a break to the downside in the soybeans. And so I'm trying to take some of my own medicine. Okay, you see this deglobalization, what do you do with it? And, you know, my overvalue on Nove beans is 1345. That's essentially right where we're at. And we've gotten above that. My undervalue is 1125. And I'm sitting here thinking, I think that report tomorrow needs to feed the bull. I think we've got a lot of longs in this market, and in part because the Brazilian currency has been very, very strong, and they've seen that. And as a result of that, they see us being able to get the Chinese business for a while. So if I see the Brazilian currency give up and the WASD report not look good for the beans after tomorrow, I think I'm going to make a move on the new crop beans and maybe be pretty aggressive.
Which of the supply-demand table items do you think would move tomorrow?
You know, I Argentina exports so little, I don't really think they're in the game to move the numbers that much. I mean, they may, as the bean panel said, they may actually need to import beans, but I think it's really up to Brazil and whether we stay around 153 or not.
Yeah, so you're looking at the world numbers from the WASD report tomorrow, which is due out at 11 o'clock Central Time, noon, if you're here in Indiana in the Eastern time zone. And I post them to the website fairly quickly under the USDA tab. If you're following me on Twitter, they come up really fast. Final word, I think, from each of you to talk about. We'll start, Greg, with you.
All right. I've only said negative things, I think, so far. So I'm going to say one more negative thing, but then I'm going to try to be in positive. At least in our area, farmers are only 10 to 15% sold on new crop corn and beans. They've been so heavily sold the last 2 years, and they've been wrong, because selling forward the last 2 years was obviously the wrong thing to do. So this year, they've taken a different tack. I still think at some point in time, as corn futures reapproach that 591 crop insurance price, that's an okay place to sell some corn. And I think that's a good place to try to get some more corn sold, because if you're just relying on your crop insurance, and crop insurance is a great product, but if you don't leverage that crop insurance by selling ahead, you're leaving a lot of money on the table. The 85% guarantee on 591 corn is 50 something. So do you really want to see corn drop 90 cents before your crop insurance kicks in? I think you need to make some sales on that. The other thing is the cost of money. If you don't sell your corn in the fall and you store it, the interest cost at 6-7% is 3 cents a month on corn and 7 cents a month on beans. So, you know, that we haven't had to worry about that for quite a few years. Having said that, there's my negative. My positive is I really think there's a lot of uncertainty in the world. We've talked a lot about that. There's a lot of unforeseen things that can happen. The weather doesn't sound like it's going to be ideal in the spring. So I think we can approach the crop insurance averages, the $5.90 to $6 prices, and we could go even higher, but obviously we could go lower as well. So just kind of use that as a base to maybe get your offers in to get some new crop corn sold, because we definitely, I think, are undersold after the last 2 years.
Greg Johnson is with TGM, the elevator in Champaign County. It's part of a larger system of 40 elevators. Thank you very much. Next to him is Mike Suzzolo. He's from globalcomresearch.com. That is with two M's. And you can find him online easily enough. He's in Atchison, Kansas. Your final word.
Todd, thanks. And another great time today. Thank you very much for all you do, as Wayne said. As Greg just said, I think in Champaign, we're running at about 1347, something like that, for new crop beans on the board, or 1325, somewhere around there. But, you know, if you get a 65 bushel yield, you're talking about $875 an acre revenue. For 2023, what I'm going to try hard to do is to find out whether wheat really can be the leader back to the upside or not. And I say that in all sincerity, because the USDA has an average cash price on wheat at $8.50. Down in Olney, Illinois right now, it's trading at about $6.50. And so you're $2 underneath the USDA average cash price. Something's got to give. And I think that's where for you in 2023, the cash market, I think, can remain fairly strong unless, you know, something like Mexico comes in and says we're not taking GMO corn or something like that, that would dash the market for a time. But the cash market's been very strong. I don't see that changing much. It's the futures market that's going to give us the whipsaw. And so if you take paper positions, what I'm going to recommend my clients and subscribers do is to take the profit or the loss very, very quickly in relation to what they have in the past, because I'm not going to stick with a futures or options position if I'm not right relatively quickly. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Kirk Kimmel is next. He is with AgMarket.net and in Normal, Illinois.
Hey, glad to be here. Glad to see you another year. I think you're right, Mike. Take a little out of the middle when you can. Ag Market and John Stewart, they put a lot of work and a lot of research into what they're doing. And an example here I'm going to give you, they got a little black box, AI, where you want to call. Over the last 32 years, they go in there and kind of project what the high and low could be for the year here. As of 1st of January on July corn futures, they had, if you have a normal year, the high could be 742, the low could be as low as 596. On December corn futures, the high end of it could be $7 and the low end could be about 493. But the point is, they come up with a lot of different things to look at and try to manage risk and put trading and hedging ideas out in front of you. So I like to see you maybe take a look at that QR code and kind of take a look at what we're looking at. They're a good outfit, and I think you'll find some value in what they're doing.
Just for one, for the University of Illinois, we also have a black box. It's on the farm dock. Is it in the tools section that you can get? I think you get a range, and it also for futures price, and it also gives you odds on that. Is that correct? That's correct. Yeah. So, and it's kind of cool. I'll have to go look it up and see exactly where it is, but it's in the Farm Doc tools. Wayne Nelson is with agmarket.net as well. Your final word.
On your old crop, look for good basis pushes. There's going to be some people in areas, you might have to drive another 10 miles or something like that. But when you see that 10, 20, 30 over for something, sell it. If you think you need to replace it with a short-term call option, that's fine, but take advantage of that, because when it gets to the point where we see the crop go in the ground good and it's growing well, they aren't going to be paying those premiums for that. The next thing I'd like to say is thank you to all of you that took the time to come out today, because this makes a meeting like this worthwhile, and they are worthwhile, but the university doesn't want to sponsor them unless we can have a nice crowd like this, do they, Todd?
Well, we do like to have a crowd with us.
Yeah, that way. And a big thanks to the Farm Doc people that really, you know, picked up our program and added a little value to it. And I'm going to encourage all of you to look at Eric Snodgrass's daily stuff that he has, and especially listen to him on Friday when he goes into great deal with Todd, because you know what a good weatherman cost? Did he tell you it was $250,000 for his model that he looks at and he shares with you two or three times a week? That guy is great, and he's invaluable.